This is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And this is our discussion on audiobooks. So if you've never done one before, this is going to walk you through the whole process. What we're going to talk about today is how to prepare your manuscript for an audiobook. The audition script, looking at different platforms and approaches you can use and different financial approaches. And why would you would choose one over the other? So first we'll do This Week in Critiques. So this is actually an older critique. It didn't happen this week, but as I was looking over the critiques this week, this is one I wanted to talk about specifically. The girl in my group, this is from my live group, had brought a manuscript that she'd written. And there were two main characters, a guy and a girl. The story was told from the girl's POV. In it, she was very upset with this old friend from high school that they had gone to visit. But as we were in her head and she was fuming about how angry she was, at no point was it ever revealed why she was angry. Huh. Which felt disingenuous to me because when I'm angry at someone, I run over that episode over and over and over in my mind. But she had wanted to keep that a secret from the audience, which is one of those fundamental things you can't do if you were inside someone's head, right? They don't get to keep
secrets. And this is a first person, not just a third person limited.
Yeah. And so because of that, I told her that the point of view was at odds with the story you want to tell. Mm. If you want to save that secret as a reveal, you need to have a different point of view character. Mm. Whether you stay in first person or if you change to third person, the point of view character cannot be the girl keeping the secret, because she would be thinking about it and it would come up.
So how would it change the story if the character just revealed that? Like, is there enough going on?
Well, in our discussion, she agreed. She's like, yeah, the guy should be the POV character. Like, it makes the story roll out a lot better smoother. And so that was kind of the decision. So we didn't explore the option of revealing the secret, because that's kind of what she wanted to keep. And so the idea was to change the point of view to the guy.
Hmm. Interesting. Good tip.
So another experience from group, this was actually a much older one, but I thought it was a great point to share about target audience. So there's a guy in my group, and he had been told this kind of fairy tale that his father had made up, and his father since passed away, and so he wanted to write this story. And the point of view character in this story is a princess, and one of the scenes we read was there's this huge ceremony where she was supposed to be given power in the kingdom. And there is this paragraph after paragraph describing the dress she was wearing in her hair for this whole ceremony.
Wait. Oh, and her hair.
Yeah, her hair and her dress as she's preparing for the ceremony. And every guy in my group was like, you need to trim that down. It's just way too much. Like, it just started to get boring. And every girl in our group was like, I loved the dress.
Oh, wow.
And so that, you know, it's not necessarily that he did it wrong, but it's knowing your target audience and recognizing feedback from the target audience. Because the target audience with that story was YA females. Like, that's his target audience. It's a female protagonist. She's a princess, right? These are key things that they zone in on in young adult reading, right? A male reader is not going to pick up that story unless he's convinced by someone pretty heavily, right? And so myself and the other guys in the group were not the target audience for the story. And so if he had listened to our feedback, it would have made the story worse, because the target audience liked those kind of details, that excessive detail on the dress and the hair. They liked it, they enjoyed it, and they wanted it. And so that critique is more about looking at making sure the feedback you're getting isn't hurting the target audience. Because there are a lot of people who critique my work or even review my book who are not the target audience. And you can see that in the way they react to it, because it really wasn't meant for them and they don't enjoy some of it.
So I had a third point I'll bring up. So I used to teach an English class, and one of my former students tweeted to me and said, What would you think about looking at an early manuscript, like an outline? And I responded very briefly to him in a tweet, but this is what I really wanted to tell him.
Huh.
And that's just, like, I do think that I could give him some valuable feedback, but I actually think that almost any of his friends would also give him valuable feedback. And just what I mean by that is, like, take a friend to ice cream and sit down and say, okay, here's the story that I've got, and tell it to them. And they'll tell you what's interesting, and they'll tell you what sounds boring. Anyway, I just think there's this huge resource that a fledgling writer has, and that's friends. Just start telling your story to friends and kind of feel it out that way. And anyway, I would love to help, but I'm swamped. Like, right. I'm working on my own projects, and it'd be a lot of fun.
And you were in grad school at the time.
So this is a current. He just tweeted this the other day.
Oh,
just recently.
So he was an old student of yours.
Yeah, a few years back.
Okay. And, if he listens to the podcast, he can submit it there. I'll check it out. All right. Okay. I mean, that's what we do.
Preston, you hear that? I'll have to send him the link. That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, I've got time set aside for each week to work through manuscripts.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure. So I think maybe I would have to ask him to write up an outline, and then we'd read through the outline or something.
So, well, because he wants feedback on the story arc. Uh-huh. Yeah, you'd have to do an outline.
Sounds like it's very early.
Yeah, probably 3 to 4 page synopsis at most is what you'd want to submit then, if you want us to take a look at the whole thing.
Hmm. Cool. That's a great idea. All right. Also, check with your friends.
Yeah, check with your friends. All right. Preparing the audition and the manuscript. So the first thing you want to do is, I assume you've published the book, and so it should be polished, right? Edited, particularly the grammar and spelling, because your narrator is going to read it as is. So if you've got some bad grammar in there, it's just going to come out that way, right? So you need to make sure you've taken care of all that. The next thing I recommend is listen to your manuscript. Does Google Docs, will it read it to you? I know Word will do it, and then there's some other programs third-party programs that will read it to you as well. I don't know if Google Docs
will. I'm not sure. I'd have to experiment.
So if you've written in Word, there's a thing that it will read it to you, and then there's several other programs available online. Who is it? Helen Hansen even talked to us about, like, she copy-pastes her whole manuscript into this little natural reader is what it is, and listens to it just a little chunk at a time. So the next thing you want to do is you want to listen to the whole manuscript, and there's a few things you're going to want to listen to for particularly in this process, and that is when thoughts could be understood as dialogue and don't have a tag to identify it differently. Because usually the way you're going to identify a verbatim thought is with italics, but the listener doesn't get that. So the context needs to communicate that it's a thought. Otherwise, you need to tag it and be like, he thought, she thought, you know, whatever. Because otherwise it can be a little confusing in the audio.
Although a good narrator is going to read that with a certain expressiveness that should help identify those italics as well.
Yeah.
But you probably just shouldn't rely on that.
Yeah. And so my experience is a lot of narrators, they try hard, but it doesn't always work. And so you don't want to every thought you don't need to tag with he thought. Every untagged dialogue you don't need to tag. What you're listening for is when it could be confusing. As you listen, be like, oh, wait, was that? Mm. And in those moments when context and everything doesn't reveal that, then you go back, then you tag those ones specifically. And the same thing with dialogue. When a dialogue could be understood as a thought, because they're not seeing the quotes outlined. So could it be understood that the character didn't say that, but they thought that? Mm-hmm. So you want to tag those. And so again, you're looking for moments when context is insufficient. Most of the time in most of the book, context will communicate these and you won't need to add these tags in. So you're looking for the moments when it confuses you a little bit. The next is tongue twisters, like Peter Piper picked a peck of pebbles, or Lois Lane loved long lavender.
These are great. Right?
And what that is just excessive alliteration. And so you need to watch for that in your book, because if you're reading it, no problem. If your narrator's reading that out loud, it becomes messy, right? So you need to watch for those. And again, you can listen for that as you listen to the book, as the computer reads it to you.
I would also say you probably don't want these printed. Not five words in a row. I don't know.
Okay. The next one you want to look at is pronunciation of strange words. If it's a fantasy and you've made words up, you'll need a pronunciation guide for how these new words are going to be pronounced, or if you're using non-English words. In my book, there's a little bit of Portuguese, there's a little bit of Spanish, and there's a little bit of Latin. So you So you'll put together a punctuation guide for anything that is not standard or any word that's really strange that the narrator might not be familiar with, right? So let's say you're reading Mary Poppins and there's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, right? So you'd want to, I guess that's not one, but even if it's an English word, but it's really obscure, not many people would know it, maybe you put in your pronunciation guide, have a link to Webster's Dictionary so they can hear, this is how it's pronounced.
So that surprises me, actually. Like, I mean, you mentioned Latin here. Mm. I would have thought that that was the reader's responsibility to know how to pronounce a Latin phrase. But,
so
I mean, you know this better than me, but...
Yeah. Well, my guy, he asked me on the Latin. He was like, I don't know how to say this. Well, and particularly because the manuscript doesn't say this is Latin. The manuscript just reads. And so he could try looking it up and maybe there's a French word that's exactly the same because it's evolved from Latin. And so what I wanted was a Latin pronunciation. And so I linked to that. This is how you would pronounce this phrase specifically.
Yeah. And there are websites and stuff that'll read, say, a Portuguese word out loud.
So putting together your pronunciation guide, particularly, you know, when you're dealing with, if you're with the Romance languages, Portuguese and Spanish, there's a lot of words that are spelled identically. And you need to identify, is this, you know, which language that's being in and how it should be pronounced.
So, Song of Locke has a lot of made up words. How would I go about writing those out? Like, there's actually a guide in the back. Is that sufficient?
Or should I say, this
rhymes with that?
I mean, there's a couple ways you could do it. You could create your own YouTube clip of you saying the words.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then they could just listen to it.
It'd probably be a lot easier.
Yeah, a lot easier. And then any dictionary will have a pronunciation guide of how things are written. And then you can follow that to point out, you know, if it's a text document you produce. So particularly where you're making up words in sci-fi or fantasy, you're going to want to make sure they've got a pronunciation guide there.
So I used what you'd find in a dictionary, but I just don't know if readers, I mean, would you expect a audiobook reader to know, like, to know all those symbols? They're kind of weird. They're kind of nerdy.
I don't know. I assume like that's their job is to know those.
Okay.
But I think the YouTube clip is probably the best way to go.
I think that's great.
Because you don't even need video. Like, you can just upload audio to YouTube and you could just tell them, hey, this is the pronunciation guide for the book. You know, I've covered all the words here.
Yeah.
The next thing you'll want, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, is the character sketches. The two really big points about this is, one, you want to take the character and compare him to a specific actor in a specific role, links to a video clip of the actor playing that role, right? So this is the character sketch. So for William Stevenson, I chose Sean Connery as John Mason in The Rock, and I pulled together some clips there. Now, you'll also want to include details about how a character emotionally reacts to various situations, particularly if that's counter to an intuitive response, right? So, for example, my character, Alice Taylor, tends to find violence funny. And so that's a detail that needs to be included in a character sketch. So when there's these really tense, violent scenes, she's kind of laughing through it, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's her character trait. And so... within the character sketch, right, connecting the character to a certain actor in a role, and then outlining specific emotional responses to situations that are not common so that the narrator knows how to read those. So, and then there are certain emotional situations that are kind of ambiguous, like at a party. How does this person react at the party? Do they kind of close off, become quiet, or do they get really loud and just kind of want to garner as much attention as possible? Either one of those responses is fairly normal for people in that situation. So you want to outline that for the narrator. So as they read through the audition script, they know how to read the emotional response of the character in the dialogue and interactions.
So this seems to me like you could have a lot of information. How do you know when you're doing too much? Or is that just don't worry about doing too much?
If you've got 100 pages, you've done too much, right? Like, you're not going to expect the narrator to read that.
Yeah.
You know,
so like 10 pages maybe?
But, you know, I would think my character sketches and everything were about half a page each.
Okay.
And I probably had 6 major characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it ended up being 3 pages. But I mean, 7 to 10 pages, I don't think would be extreme, you know, because what a good VO actor is going to do is they're going to compile a character sketch themselves. That's all audio. And they're going to work with what you've given them. They're going to read dialogue in the book, and they're going to really try and figure out the character. And then anytime they have to voice that character, they're going to refer back to their character sketch to make sure they get the voice right and the emotional reactions right and everything. And so that's what you're really helping them compile, is their own character sketch that is an audio recording that they're going to hang on to.
Okay, yeah, that makes good sense.
So you want to make sure, you know, to help, you know, to get the performance you want out of them, you've got to make sure you give them good direction there. Sub-character details. So these are the minor characters that fill up the book. And so here in the examples, I'm going to talk about three characters. And all three of these characters I'm going to mention show up in one chapter, and that's it. At no point do they ever show up in the book again. One of the things you want to look at in your manuscript is there anything that's going to help the narrator know how to voice these minor characters? So in one of my characters, I mentioned he had a southern accent. The narrator was able to say, okay, he's a heavy guy. He's got a southern accent. Who have I met in my life that fit that description? And that's the voice he used, right? But there were just these two little details that gave him enough to kind of give that voice, that character, a unique voice. And he did a fantastic job. The next one is there's a lawyer in Florida. And again, it's like Florida, that's the South. So we pulled in another Southern accent for that role there. And then one of the characters' name was Becky Davis, and she had a really high nasal voice. And again, he was able to take that and make it unique and distinct for her because he'd met somebody who talked with this really high nasal voice.
So in your book, it says high nasally voice.
Yeah.
You pointed that out to him, and then
he delivered it. Yeah. And so when you're looking at all these minor characters, is there anything for them that's going to help him make a unique voice for this character? Because if not, then they're just in the dark.
Man, so my initial thought was, if there isn't anything, then let the narrator just make it up as he goes, right? But then I thought, well, that's probably a flaw with the book. You should add something in there that makes them a unique human.
Pop a little bit more. Yeah. So I'll be honest. So when I was listening to the book, his recordings, and I heard this lawyer talking, I was like, why is he so Southern? And then I thought about it for a second. I was like, because we're there in Florida, and that's why he chose that accent for him. Like, that makes perfect sense.
That's great.
So, yeah, it was kind of an interesting moment. So those are things to look at for prepping the audition script. So the audition script itself is going to contain, so in the audition script, you're going to have your character sketches, and then you're going to have a script itself. And what you're going to want to take is not the first chapter of the book. What you want to take is selections that include all the major characters. Not necessarily at once. Like for me, I'd be like, okay, I've got two major characters in this scene. Looks like they each have an emotional shift. So I'm going to take that section and put it in there. And it's maybe half a page, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I took sections to make sure I had all the main characters for which there were character sketches, and they were selections with them presenting at least two different emotions throughout the scene. And so that then was the audition script. The character sketches up front, and then these pieces of dialogue and interactions, so that I could see not only how he voiced the character, but how he voiced the emotional shifts in those characters in the audition. And so that's what you're going to want to cut in there for your audition script. You're also going to want to contain thoughts. So you want to see how does he differentiate dialogue from thought. So you're going to need to make sure the audition script contains a character doing a little bit of both. You may not have all that for all characters. Like, not all my main characters ever become POV characters, and so I don't have thoughts for all of them. But definitely, like, the number one main character POV, if there's a lot of thoughts, you're definitely going to make sure that the audition script contains both of those. So you can see dialogue and thought and the difference between the two in their presentation. Also, if there's different POVs, see how they narrate that differently for the POV character. And so you may point out the POV of this chapter is this character. And then you can see some narrators just do the same voice for blanket narration, but some change it up depending on the narrator. And and you won't be able to see that unless you've given that information and that option there. in the audition.
Does your audiobook narrator just do the same?
Just the same.
Yeah. So. I feel like that's mostly what I've listened to.
Yeah, mostly. But I've seen a few where it's different. Kind of interesting. Yeah. Kind of like it a little bit.
No, it could be cool.
Yeah. And then the next, I guess, another question you want to look at is, do you have the rights? And this is if you're traditionally published, right? And I bring this up because if you follow the podcast from the beginning, we interviewed an author named Lisa Wilson. We talked to her about audiobooks specifically, and her publisher was there with her. And he had mentioned that according to our contract, she has retained audio rights. Huh. And so if you're considering an audiobook, you're traditionally published, they haven't done one, you might want to look at your contract and look at it. Do you retain those audio rights? At which point you would be going forward with the audiobook on your own. So you also might want to look at if they don't produce an audiobook within so many years, do those rights refer back to you?
Cool.
So those are some things to look at as far as rights if you're traditionally published there. So platforms and finding talent. So we'll talk about the old school method before. And back when I did my very first audiobook, this is what we did. We contacted talent agencies and they posted it. And then their clients would then, I guess they'd submitted for it. And then they sent us a list of phone numbers. These are the interested parties. Right. And some of us sent in audio clips. Like we had an email address and some of them sent a clip and we could just listen to it. But some of it was a phone number and we just called them and had them read the script that they got from the agency. So that's old school. And depending on what country you're in, you may still have to do it that way. It'd probably be a little different now. Like you'd contact the agency and everyone would just submit a clip as opposed to actually calling them these days. That's still a method. Like you could still contact an agency that way.
I'm surprised to hear that you have expertise in that.
That's done awesome. It that way.
Yeah, that's cool.
That was a long time ago. So ACX is a big one. Everybody knows about, owned by Amazon. They connect through audible.com. However, they are currently only available in the US and Canada. So if you are not in those countries, it's not available to you. However, there are companies in the US and Canada who will take you on as a client and then submit to ACX for you through them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
So it's just a loophole. Hmm. But I mean, like if, you know, if ACX is like the mecca of audiobooks, then, you know, and they're not letting the rest of the world in.
It just seems odd to me that the internet has borders. Like, you just type in the URL. Why does it matter? Yeah, it's weird. It's a shame.
So that's ACX, and that's the ACX loophole. And then with ACX, if you go with the royalty share, that's a 7-year contract you have with your producer. And it just, I guess it just helps protect them for their time invested. And the royalty.
Wait, so meaning you'll share royalties for 7 years, but then after that, no?
I don't know exactly if it's after that you don't share or rather after that you can have it produced again by someone else. Because I can't, like you can't have anyone else produce it. So you may continue to share royalties as long as that book is the one that's available.
That makes sense.
But in 7 years, you could maybe have it redone. Mm-hmm. And then with the new book, you wouldn't be sharing royalties with the original producer. But I think you would continue to share royalties as long as that's the audiobook you're selling.
That makes sense.
So, and then there's a company called Draft Digital. And they have just started a sub company called Voices. And this is in most countries, but not all. And essentially, it is like ACX, except it's going through Draft Digital instead. It's not going to show up on audible.com. Actually, it probably will. Never mind. I think they do have an end to Audible.
Yeah, I think you can still publish it.
Yeah, they're still publishing. Yeah, they should still be publishing on Audible. But they do not offer royalty share. I guess I don't know what they feel, but they have made the decision to not give that option to producers or authors.
So if you're just paying up front, then, like, how much should you expect as an overhead for making your book?
Okay, so we'll talk about that in just one second. So there's a few others I want to cover. So WhisperSync is one thing to look at. And so There needs to be a 97% match between the text in your published book and the audiobook for there to be a whisper sync. You do not set that up. Amazon does. And it just takes a couple days to a week or so for them to connect the two.
Just in case you're not familiar, that means you sell your ebook on Kindle, sell your audiobook on Audible. And if the reader buys both of them, then as they're flipping ahead on their Kindle, their audiobook will skip ahead and vice versa.
And vice versa, yeah. So Whisper Sync, so yeah, you just need to make sure that, you know, and again, that's just about having that clean manuscript going into the audiobook so that it's the same as the one that's on Kindle. In a flat-up purchase versus a royalty share is pretty straight across the board. You know, the retailer takes their cut, and then you split the remainder 50-50 with the producer. But then on the pay up front, you usually pay for what's called per produced hour. And so what that is looking at, like my audiobook is 10 hours and 11 minutes. And so if I had been paying up front for it, what I would pay for is 10 hours, but it's per production. And they'll usually tell you on their end that it's usually about 3 hours of time invested for a produced hour. And so you'll see producers range all across the board on what they'll charge. You know,
So that's just up to the specific reader on
ACX. Yeah, it's just up to the producer. Oh, you know, I've seen it like as low as 20. I've seen it as high as like 700. Just depends on the narrator.
That's a huge range.
So, it's probably bigger. Like, because I mean, you've seen like audiobooks done by like Scarlett Johansson. Imagine what the, you know, per produced hour cost is on that. It's probably insanely high.
Yeah.
So particularly because she's probably not doing any of the editing on her end. She's probably just showing up, recording, and then the editor, maybe she'll do multiple takes, but then somebody else is doing the editing. So yeah. I mean, it's a very high cost there. Per produced hour. So, you know, so it's all across the board, just depending on what you want to do there. Do you have anything else on audiobooks?
Oh, so Barack Obama read his own book. Neil Gaiman reads his. I just started Scott Adams' book. He's the creator of Dilbert, and he actually has a great voice, but he doesn't do his own book, which I was kind of bummed. Anyway, what considerations, because you can get on ACX and record it yourself too, right? At what point do you know that you're a Barack Obama and can narrate your own? And when is it a good thing not to do?
I guess I kind of knew up front. So for those, for my beta readers, I recorded the book just so it would be easier for them to listen to. And this is actually a secret, another project I'm working on, but this is one of the things we're going to tell people is. So when I finished my first novel, I was asking for beta readers. I had probably 10 people agree to be beta readers. Of those 10 people, 2 people read the book, right? Which is about what you expect.
Yeah. It's
so not when I finished this most recent novel, I was preparing for the beta readers, I recorded it into audio. And so I had about the usual number of text people say, yeah, I'll read it. I had 3 people say, I'll read the text. 2 read it. 1 didn't, you know. But I had over 20 people agree to listen to the audiobook, all of which did listen to the audiobook. Not only that, but I started to get emails and phone calls from people they had told about the book requesting the beta audiobook.
Wow.
Right? And so what I did wrong here is I should have told every one of those people, be like, yes, but I need you to write a review and send it to me so that I know it exists. And then when the book is out and released, I'll send you the review back and you can copy paste it to Amazon. Man, right? That's what I should have done. What I should have done. And that's what I will do in the future from now on with my books. And it's definitely what I tell all authors to do from now on. When you're prepping for beta readers, record it and they can listen to it and you'll get a lot more beta readers and make sure that every beta reader commits to writing a review. And if the book's not out yet, have them send it to you now and then you just be like, I will send it back to you on launch day and you can copy paste.
So I have a slightly different take. But so I sent my books out to a bunch of readers and then I usually do a phone call where after they finish reading, I just have a series of questions that I ask them. That's and I'm good. Just like furiously typing notes as they go. A lot of times they'll say really cool things about the book. Mm-hmm. And I make sure to type those down. So I've actually written their review, which was their words.
Right.
I write it down And then later, I'm able to just say, hey, here's what you said.
That's beautiful.
Feel free to add anything to it, but can you post this?
That's even better. I'm doing that from now on.
Yeah, so the post interviews, I tell them when they subscribe, I'm like, hey, if you're going to be a reader, it's about how long the book is. When we're done, I'm going to call you up and ask you a few questions.
So combine the two. Convert it to audio. You'll get more beta readers and interview them. Make notes, and when it's time for review time, be like, hey, these are the things you said. Can you convert this into review for me? So beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. So as far as knowing if you're, you know, I mean, I guess for me, like I said, I just knew because I had done my own audiobook and I listened to it and it wasn't great. And I knew that, you know, I knew I wanted a narrator. And maybe what I'll do is I'll dig up a clip from my book.
Oh, and that'd be kind of fun.
And so I'll put up here a clip of me reading the original chapter one, and I'll put up the clip of Bill reading it. And you will see, like me, be like, yeah, Bill has to read that book. Joe's terrible. You know, and I don't think I'm terrible, but compared to Bill, I am. Like, I read the book. Bill performs the book. Mm. And you can see that right off. The characters have voices, and it's, you know, is his tone and his pacing, everything, you know, moves to push the narrative more forward. I think I wrote a great book, but with Bill narrating it, it is amazing.
So I listened to your rough draft audiobook.
Yeah.
And you're actually a very expressive speaker. So you do a great job, but I can see what you mean that maybe just like a little bit of polish on the edges because you haven't practiced as a dramatist.
Yeah.
Actually, wait, did you do?
No.
Okay. Anyway, but yeah, I think you actually could pull it off. I think that's what I'm saying. But I've listened to your reader, and he's actually super talented.
Oh, he's so talented. Yeah, he's amazing. So yeah, so I'll put that at the end of this. If you want to listen to the two, you can listen to me, and then you can listen to Bill. And every one of you, I guarantee, will agree, Bill is the far superior narrator. And, you know, and so maybe you can just, you know, take an audiobook that you love, and pick a chapter and narrate it yourself and then compare you to the narrator that is on there. And if you can't compete, then you need to bring in a narrator.
Maybe send us to some friends too.
To compare the
two. What do you think of these two?
Yeah.
Cool.
So this week in marketing, I heard this and I think I'm going to kind of agree with it. And that is to stick to a marketing plan, because over the last several months as I've been trying my book, I feel like every week I try something new and it doesn't work and I move on to the next thing. And I heard this woman talking about marketing, and her last name was Taylor. Can't remember her first name. Sounds like Taylor. And she was saying, stick to your marketing plan. And she says, you see people have amazing success in different areas, and some people have amazing success across the board. He says, but what they have done is they have worked and worked at a system till it works for them. He says, if you keep jumping from a new marketing system to a new marketing system, you're never going to get very good at any of them, and so they're not going to work for you. She's like, and I mean, you have to identify that some of them can't. You know, like I have heard countless authors say, if you have one book out, Facebook ads won't work. And it's not that Facebook ads don't sell book, it's that the cost of an ad is too high. You need to have a series before you can make a positive return on that. And so working at Facebook ads as hard as you can constantly, if you have one book, might not get you anywhere. A lot of people say it just won't work. But what you want to do is pick one area of marketing and work at it until it works, instead of jumping off before you've really developed your expertise. And that really hit home for me, because that's what I've been doing. I've been like, that doesn't work, I'll try something new. That doesn't work, I'll try something new. You know? And so I thought she had a really good point to just pick one and just chip away at it constantly, figure it out, really develop your expertise and focus. And so she was saying, follow your marketing plan. And then when you've fulfilled it, then you start looking what's new, what's different. I'll try that one at a time, develop the expertise. And I thought that was really good advice for marketing.
Well, so if you're an amateur marketer, like what's the one thing that you ought to start with and just keep hacking away at?
I can't tell you that. I don't know. I'm still trying. So my plan, I can tell you, my plan is to focus on Amazon ads. Because Amazon is a selling platform.
Yeah.
They are on Amazon to buy. And so if your ad is just about one, working incredibly hard. Like, essentially, from what I've seen, you've just got to write like an infinite number of ads, like tons of them, because they don't get a lot of clicks. They don't get a lot of impressions. Like, Amazon just doesn't show a lot of ads. And so you've got to have a lot of them, and you've got to keep tweaking them constantly until you can start getting some good impressions rate. From what I've seen, though, on all the studying, the click rate is really low and the purchase rate is really high, because, you know, they're on Amazon to buy something, and likely if your book is showing up in a product display or related products, it's going to show up in someone who's on Amazon to buy a book, right? And so that's really, if they're clicking on your ad, as long as your blurb is strong, they're probably going to buy your book at that point.
Well, and you mentioned doing many different ads, and that's what you want to test, essentially, is you do different blurbs, different title taglines, and you'll start to see which of those are converting well and which ones aren't. And then you can kind of iterate off of what you've learned.
I don't know where the best place to start is, but that's where I plan to start.
So I love that, and I think it's a great idea. I would just add that you want to set up an email newsletter pipeline.
Yeah.
And this is very easy to do, but you want to start, I think, early collecting your fans so that you can keep them around.
Yeah.
So I would do that as well.
All right. As always, leave us a review. We would love it. I would put a link in the newsletter for you to leave us a review, but that won't go to iTunes. Like, I have no way to open your iTunes application. You have to make that choice on your own.
Wait, I think there is a page you can link to.
So I can link to a page, but if you click like leave a review, if you click on anything on that page, it will take you to the Apple download iTunes page. So like there's
that
even
sucks.
Like even like on my website. If you click on the download it on iTunes, it will take you to the page. You can see all our episodes. You can see our rating and reviews. If you click on anything, it will then tell you to download iTunes.
Okay.
So I can't. So if I could, I would put that link there for you and make your lives easier. I can't. You have to go there on your own. You have to make that choice on your own. But leave us a review. We would love it. Join the giveaway and share them for a better chance to win. The July 31st is when that closes. So like I said, if you just go to the website, Joseph-Bendoski, B as in boy, E-N-D-O-S-K-I. In the start writing section, you can join the giveaways there. And that is Dragon voice recognition software or 8 hours of editing.
And if you're one of our listeners from the future, we're going to still have, giveaways going on. So go sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah. And if you enjoy the show, check out one of our books. It's in the newsletter. You can just click on a link. And check out our books there. Write in if you have any suggestions or comments about what you like, topics you'd like us to cover, or if there's something we covered and you want us to go deeper in, we would be happy to do it. We'd love it if you'd sign up for a newsletter. And then in the newsletter, I will put a link to the Facebook group if you want to join there. And or you can just go there on your own. It's Start Writing, just what we are. And I think that's it. Anything from you?
What's the URL for the newsletter?
You are, what do you mean?
What link do they go to?
Oh, just
subscribe.
Just the website.
Joseph-Bendoski.com.
And then if you just click on the Start Writing tab, it's one of the navigation tabs at the top. Anywhere that asks for your email is going to sign you up for the newsletter there. So there should be a pop-up, and then you can sign up there, or there's just a blanket one that just stays there. You can sign up. So if you click if you click for the giveaway, it will sign you up for the newsletter. We're trying to sign you up any way we can.
And if you're hesitant, by the way, once you get our newsletter, it's very easy to unsubscribe too.
Yeah,
if you change your
just
mind,
click one button. And
we will not spam you.
So when you first sign up, you'll probably get another newsletter informing you of what our best episodes are, what people have really, you know, our top downloaded episodes, and you'll get another one saying these are our giveaways. So you do get those two right away when you've subscribed, just so you're aware of the giveaways and so you can hear, you know, the best episodes we've got. And then after that, you just get one a month.
Excellent. Guys, thanks for listening.
Yep. Tell your friends. So I apologize. I've looked everywhere and I cannot find my original narration of the beta version of the book. So I will not be attaching those samples. I've probably deleted it once I started working with Bill.